Hello, this is Mike Swanson. I'm the author of the book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In a few moments, another episode of The Great Parallax Views will begin. But before it starts, let me tell you about my book. It's available at Amazon.com, The War State. It's about how the United States became a global superpower after World War II and has brought us to this situation. Grab the book at Amazon.com after the show.
I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
In Georgia, there are 568 guys named James Brown who lost their vote because they found 568 James Browns in Detroit, in Phoenix, in Baltimore. Surprised that you found 500 guys named James Brown? They said it's all the same guy, or actually pairs of them. And they pair them up, and they said James Thomas Brown is the same voter as James Edward Brown. James Brown Sr. is the same voter as James Brown Jr. These are all excuses to remove voters.
Hey, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, we're covering the topic of election integrity, which, if you haven't noticed, for the past two decades has become an issue that's receiving more and more attention from concerns over electronic voting machines to the alleged Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Muckraking investigative journalist Greg Palast, however, has been laser-focused on an issue related to election integrity that requires no speculation and is undeniable, namely voter purges. For 20 years now, Greg has been on the trail of America's vanished votes. Believe it or not, every election, a sizable number of members from the American electorate see their votes go uncounted or purged from the voter rolls. It's a scandal that needs to be addressed, and Greg Palast has been shining a light on it for quite some time. He joins us on this edition of Parallax Views to discuss his latest book on the subject, How Trump Stole 2020. But before you get into doom and gloom mode, he says we can steal it back. All that and more on this edition of Parallax Views. Welcome to Parallax Views, investigative journalist and author of How Trump Stole 2020, Greg Palast. I'm very excited about this interview, having you on the show, because you're one of my journalistic heroes. I remember I did a project in high school where I had to talk about what I wanted to do for my career. And in my PowerPoint, I had a picture of you. And I said, I want to be an investigative journalist like Greg Palast. So,
did you get the hat? You see, the hat is the key. The hat's the whole thing. It's the fedora. You can't be an investigator without a fedora. You know that.
So, Greg, this new book, How Trump Stole 2020. I think people are going to look at the title and say, oh my God, it's already over? Really? How do you respond to that for people that may misinterpret the title?
It's in past tense, my friend. Trump did steal the election. We can steal it back. We can bust the burglary. It's already been stolen, but it can be unstolen. That's why I wrote the book. If I thought it was really all over, I'd just, you know, find a place in another hemisphere on a beach and And say, see you later. Sayonara. Enjoy your Agent Orange. And I'm off. But in fact, it's not a prediction. It's your final warning. How Trump Stole 2020 is a warning that if we don't act, that's what happens. And you have to understand, it's the reason I say it's been stolen is, let's start with this fact. 17 million Americans, according to the federal government, from an agency you've probably never heard of, but according to the federal government, 17 million people have been removed from the voter rolls in the last 2 years of record keeping. About 1 in 12 voters, and if that's you, you ain't voting and you ain't getting a mail-in ballot unless you fix it, which you can easily fix, by the way. In fact, the whole book tells you how you can easily fix the problem for yourself and for the people you know, and then, of course, the policy recommendations. But you don't need Mitch McConnell's approval or new laws to save your vote.
So I want to hone in on something real quickly here. When people talk about the issue of election integrity or stolen elections, I think a lot of times people can get confused. A lot of times there's talk about, oh, the integrity of electronic voting, or there's talk of Russian interference. Your work on this subject is very specific, and it doesn't necessarily deal with those two topics as much.
It doesn't, right? Well, here's the thing. You know, you talk about Russians. I have a chapter in How Trump Stole 2020 called Russian to Judgment. Yeah, it'd be nice to say that the Russians did it to us, and they did try to interfere in the election. The evidence is stone cold solid. I read all the, at least the executive summaries of the Mueller report. But it's also, reading the Mueller report, it's pretty minor stuff, like about 350,000 Facebook ads versus $1 billion expenditure by Hillary and another $1 billion by Trump's cronies in 527 accounts. So it's like the Russians were a mosquito trying to stop a Steph Curry dunk. So here's the deal. The elections are stolen way before election day. So what I concentrate on is Jim Crow, which is still here. So we have 17 million people, that could be you, removed from the voter rolls. That's already happened. And therefore, you have to get back your vote. Your vote's been stolen from you. You know, you can't, and so I'm very, very concerned about this, plus new rules. And here's the trick. The other thing I cover, not only do I talk about the mass removal of voters from voter rolls, which is basically an untouched subject in America, pretty much. I mean, not to African-American leaders or like ACLU and others I work with, and Stacey Abrams of Fair Fight Georgia. But I also am very concerned about something else in American elections, which is we don't count all the votes. Now, let me repeat that. We don't count all the votes, and that's official. Okay, if you look in How Trump Stole 2020, and again, I'm going to lean back here and get it. Let's see. There's a copy. How convenient. I have a copy of my own book. That doesn't always happen, by the way. in fact, I have to look things up because I don't have it quite memorized yet. But okay, so for example, we don't, here you go. Inside the book, I have a chapter called the Uncounted 7,854,928. We keep a very exact calculation of votes we don't count in America. Did you know that? We have an
That's
agency
an amazing
called the
number.
Elections Assistance Commission. They not only track our voting, but they track our non-voting. So we had, for example, in the last election, 2016, we had 1,913,369 ballots which were cast and thrown in the garbage, rejected. They call it spoiled, undervotes, whatever. They have names for it. 1.9 million votes. Now, you will remember that Donald Trump supposedly won the presidency by about 70,000 votes in three states. Officially, 1.9 million votes were thrown in the garbage. That's not the entire set of, that's the in-precinct votes that were thrown out, challenged and rejected. And for example, did it make a difference? Yeah. Take a look at Michigan. In Michigan, and read my, in How Trump Stole 2020, I have a chapter called Michigan, Michigas. Michigas is a French term for confusion. And in Michigan, Michigas, I explained that While Trump won Michigan by 10,700 votes, which ain't spit, on the other hand, 75,000 votes, 75,355 to be exact, were never counted. Where? In Detroit. Now, let's think about that a minute. Let's do some arithmetic, JG. Sorry. I promoted you to a deity for a moment. so here's the deal. Donald Trump supposedly winning by 10,000 votes. If you don't count 75,000 votes in Detroit, that's Motown. I was there for Democracy Now, a TV show, investigating. 75,355 ballots weren't counted in Detroit because 87 counting machines, that is those scanners, you stick the paper in and scan to count the vote, broke down. So they literally, the machines that count your votes broke down. Where? They broke down in one of the most African-American cities in the world, in Detroit, Motown. So whose votes were they? If you counted those ballots, and Trump went to court to block the counting of those ballots successfully. He successfully blocked the counting of those ballots. It wasn't the voters' fault. The machines broke. 75,355 voters, including, by the way, Carlos Garcia, who I met, who was there in Detroit at, I went to his polling station. And you have all these votes behind the machine, not in the machine, because the machine was broken down. Those votes were never counted. And it's almost entirely African-American, Latinx, and young people who moved into Detroit, into those precincts. That's whose votes didn't get counted. So who won Michigan? Trump or the broken machines? That's who elected Donald Trump president. Now, by the way, the city clerk of Detroit told the Republican state governor, we have machines that will not make it through Election Day in 16. Please give us money to get new machines. And of course, the Republican government said, oh, black people in Detroit won't have their votes counted? Oh, my, what a shame. So he told her to go f*** herself. I mean, in that nice legalistic way that they do. You can beat that if you want.
So in regards to this election integrity issue, for my younger listeners, I came across your work initially because of the 2000 election. And there's so many controversies around the 2000 election. How did you get on the trail of what happened in 2000, Bush versus Gore, and how does it tie into what's happening today?
Okay, that's the original sin, was the Bush so-called victory. Now, I was working for The Guardian. I'm still working for The Guardian. The Guardian and BBC Television out of England. I was living in London. And I'm watching all these people come before the TV cameras, American stations, saying, and on BBC, because at that time, BBC was one of the few networks that showed black people who weren't criminals, right? So we had black people coming on saying we couldn't vote here in Florida. I went to vote, and they said I couldn't vote. And I'm going, what the hell? Maybe there's some type of weird computer program which is erasing voters from the voter rolls. You know, I mean, I know it sounds like a crazy conspiracy theory that they have a computer program that erases black people from voter rolls. Until I got the computer program, I got two CDs with the lists of people that they had removed. No other reporter had gotten those. I insisted on getting the list. And there they were. In the end, 94,000 people, almost all of them black men, who were listed as felons. People who had committed crimes, you know, father rapers and mother stabbers who shouldn't vote in Florida, weren't allowed to vote in Florida. At that time, you couldn't vote if you're an ex-con. So I said, okay, well, but are they ex-cons? As it turns out, I went through the list with experts, name by name by name, and exactly zero, zero, zero were ex-cons. Zero were illegal voters, none. But most of them were guilty of voting while black. I'm not guessing because it said BLA next to their names. George Bush became president of the United States based on just 537 ballots. That determined not 537 electoral votes. I'm talking about 537 ballots in Florida made George W. Bush president after they removed tens of thousands of black men from the voter rolls. So you tell me who won. They got away with it. They got away with it. And that's what led to the explosion of this trick throughout the states. Now, they had to change things because most states, in fact, as we speak today, there's not a single state which still permanently bars ex-con voters from voting. So they can't use the ex-con trick because it's not illegal for an ex-con to vote anymore anywhere. But what they've got new tricks like, oh, you've moved. There's all kinds of ways to remove you from the voter rolls. Here's the difference. There they removed 94,000 voters. That's an awful lot. But now they've removed 17 million voters altogether, hundreds of thousands in swing states. Georgia's a swing state, or should be. They removed 500,000 voters in Georgia, which is a white minority state at this point. Why are the Republicans in control? Arizona. Ohio removed 800,000 voters without a shred of supporting evidence. And I mean nothing. You'll read it in the book. 800,000. And suddenly, Ohio goes from Obama in 12 and 16, and suddenly it's Trump. How does that happen? Eight and 12. Suddenly it's Trump in 2016. But here's the problem. They've gotten better at it since 16. Wisconsin, they're trying, as we speak, the state of Wisconsin, or right-wing billionaires have sued the state of Wisconsin to require them, to force them to remove 152,000 voters. Now, Trump won that state by just 21,000 voters officially. So if you remove 152,000, you just remove seven times Trump's margin. Now, if we're removing anyone, who cares? But most of the people removed are weirdly, strangely, interestingly, Dane County, which is Madison, which is where the University of Wisconsin is. Okay, the most progressive university student body in America, University of Wisconsin. And the other part of the people being removed are in Milwaukee. So who's there? That's the African American Center. So they know what they're doing. They remove students, young people, African Americans, Latino, but anyone can be removed. But they're running this purge program. One thing, but there's always hope, and I want to tell you about the hope too. There's good news.
What is the good news then?
Since you're nodding, you want the good news.
Yeah.
That'd be good news. Okay. I'll be Santa Claus for a minute, the Easter Bunny. Despite all the trickery in Wisconsin that was used, all the Jim Crow tricks that won 2016, in 2018, the population got so pissed off at the manipulation of the voting, this was a big issue, that Scott Walker, the Republican governor, was thrown out on his keister, as well as the Attorney General, Secretary of State. They went Democratic at the executive level. State legislature, which is gerrymandered to a sickening fare-thee-well, remains Republican. They passed a law saying you got to purge these voters. But I have to say that the new governor and the new lieutenant governor, Mandela Barnes, who I met with in Milwaukee, they said, no, this is crap, these purge lists. And in fact, the new state elections board, three Democrats, three Republicans, all six, including the Republicans, said, no, this purge list is bullshit. It's a bunch of black people and students. Why are they removing them? Well, the excuse for removing them, by the way, is that they are that people have moved. So I went to Milwaukee and I went confronted Sequana Taylor, one of the people on the hit list who they said had moved. This is in the book, How Trump Stole 2020. And I said to Sequana, why are you voting in Milwaukee, according to these guys, to these billionaire right-wing guys who are suing the state? They say you have to be removed from the voter rolls because you've left Milwaukee. Why are you voting in Milwaukee? In fact, that's a crime. You can't vote somewhere where you don't live. You go to jail for 5 years for that, by the way. She said, I haven't left Milwaukee. In fact, it's easy to look at the name on the building that I'm on. I'm the Milwaukee County Supervisor. Oh. But she admitted to me that she was guilty of voting while black. That's why they removed her.
I feel like it's a story that is so hard for people to believe and that hasn't been covered enough in a lot of our corporate media. I'm curious, why do you think that it's taken so long for the issue of vanishing voters to really sort of penetrate mainstream media? I know there's been a little bit more talk of it now.
I can't guess all of it, but I'm going to give you two. We're definitely making some breakthroughs. I'm working with some mainstream media outlets, et cetera. And I don't want to knock every member in my profession. But the truth is that my profession divides into two groups of journalists, white ones and ones that aren't that white. And the white ones really don't want to cover the issue of race. I've been on MSNBC, but never with a pale face host. And this is a continuing problem. They'd rather have people talk about vote suppression, which is a very funny word. Talking about, you know, they like to say everyone's affected, which is true, but that's a fucking lie. Right now, I'm going to tell you, it's black people, it's Latinos, it's Asian Americans, and it is a group of white people known as students, though they are treated as if they aren't white. So this is what's happening in America. They're going after the most vulnerable people politically, and those are not people who own TV stations. They don't own newspapers. They don't get covered. And that's simple. We just had, they say, well, you covered, you know, the George Floyd killing. No, there wasn't a single journalist that covered that. That was uncovered by citizen journalists with cell phones. We wouldn't even have the issue of police brutality because, for the most part, the U.S. white media is not going to cover it. So a lot of the stories we have are not brought by our media. When I was, again, I was in, you know, in London having to cover the U.S. elections to get the information. Again, because it's about the removal of non-white folks. So it's not the group of journalists. It's not the people in their crowd. They don't understand it at all. It's very, very difficult for them to understand. I actually had an editor, by the way, at the Salon, a guy named Carrie Lauder, I remember. And when I explained to him that in Florida, they were removing ex-cons illegally who'd been convicted in New York. Now, understand, in New York and most states, you don't lose your right to vote because you've had a conviction. Well, they weren't allowed to vote in Florida without a letter of clemency that said they could vote again. Well, since they never lost their right to vote, they can't get a letter of clemency. So you have all these guys in Florida who couldn't vote because they couldn't get a letter of clemency because they never lost their right to vote. So it's a game they were playing, but they understand that 88% of ex-cons are Democrats. Democratic Party doesn't like to talk about that. 88% of ex-cons are Democrats. And so obviously they don't want them to vote. And the funny thing was, this was an I had a minister who had once been convicted as a young man of crack cocaine in New York, found God, moved to Florida and started working with ex-cons to, you know, bring them back and, you know, get them jobs and work with them. And so he tried to register to vote. He was denied the right to vote. And my editor, a white guy who went to Yale Journalism School, said, I don't understand why this guy didn't pound the table and demand his vote. Well, the guy, this African-American, was in Alachua County, Florida. And the reason they were under the Voting Rights Act is that African-Americans who tried to vote in Alachua just a few years before were hung from lampposts and trees. No, black people don't pound the table in Alachua. And it was very, I couldn't convince my white editor from Yale Journalism School that the story was real because, hey, he would have, he's from Yale privileged prep school. He would pound the table if you take away his rights. He doesn't understand people who can't pound tables if they want to live. And so you have a complete disconnect between the journalism class, which is part of the ruling class, and is the propaganda arm of the ruling class, and the victims of the ruling class.
I was going to say, too, it also seems like another aspect of this is that the sort of GOP right-wing noise machine and their media outlets, they like to focus on, oh, voter fraud. And, you know, the voter ID laws will allow all kinds of people to vote that shouldn't be allowed to vote. And, you know, that takes away attention from the real issue of voter purges.
That's correct. So what's happened is we have what I call the hysteria machine, that, oh, we have to stop illegal voters. Unfortunately, there's a lot of Democrats who repeat that BS because they don't want to be seen as supporting illegal voters. Do you know that in Florida, when I busted the fact that tens of thousands of black men had lost their vote, the Democratic Party chair, I'll give him credit, he tried to get some white Democrats to complain about it. He couldn't get one. They wouldn't do it. Because they said, well, we're not going to support felon voters. I said, but they weren't felons. They weren't anything. They're just voting while black. None of them. Zero. Nope. No good. So we have this hysteria factory. The dead are voting. Aliens are voting. In fact, in my book, I have a picture of the aliens voting. It's a cartoon of a spaceship coming down and little aliens are running out. They've got, you know, vote Hillary on their sombreros that the aliens are wearing. But other than that cartoon, I haven't been able to find any illegal alien voters. And neither has the fraud hunters of the Republican Party, like Chris Kobach of Kansas, who's a star of my book. And he's the Trump's vote thief in chief. He's been looking for alien voters for years. So where are they? He said there were millions, millions. So arrest one, because after all, if someone's voting, you've got their name, you've got their address, they show up to vote. Most states take your emails and phone numbers. It's pretty easy. And the FBI, it's a federal crime, so the FBI is in there. They don't find the illegal voters. In fact, you'll see in my book the picture of a guy named Stuber, Agent Stuber of the FBI. He was hired by the state of North Carolina to find illegal voters. People have been voting twice. The Republican elections board chief said, I have evidence here. It's like Joe McCarthy. I've got this list of illegal voters. I have 35,000 people I know have voted twice because I have their addresses, social security numbers, birth dates, everything. And I have them voting in our state and in Virginia. Really? So I said, well, go and arrest him. So they spent $1 million, hired an FBI agent. He worked for more than a year scouring the state. He had the list of all these illegal voters. And every time he found an illegal voter, it's interesting. Their names were like James Brown. It turns out there was another James Brown in Virginia, in the other state, but they had different middle names. Oh, I actually went there and met with these so-called illegal double voters. Okay, who had different middle names. There was a guy named John Antonio Brown. And he was mixed with another John Brown. Believe it or not, there was a second John Brown in America with a different middle name. One was junior, one was senior. Didn't matter. They said it's the same voter. But this is the games that they're playing. Now, here's the trick. Why would they bother? Think about it. James Brown, godfather of soul. Now, how many godfathers of soul are there? There's one. But in Georgia, I have a chapter called 568 James Browns. In Georgia, there are 568 guys named James Brown who lost their vote because they found 568 James Browns in Detroit, in Phoenix, in Baltimore. Surprised that you found 500 guys named James Brown? They said it's all the same guy, or actually pairs of them. And they pair them up. And they said James Thomas Brown is the same voter as James Edward Brown. James Brown Sr. is the same voter as James Brown Jr. These are all excuses to remove voters. But here's the trick. 85 of the 100 most common names in America are minority names. James Brown. So, you know, think about it. James Brown is a common name. Garcia, Rodriguez, Kim, Ho, Park. What's not common? Koch, Kobach, Trump. You getting the picture? So the history of slavery, the history of the conquest in Latin America is that minorities have common names. They share names. So what you do is you find people with similar names. And, oh, they're all the same guy. That doesn't happen to a lot of white people. But they're coming up with ways to get at the new minority, which is young people. And they're also going after Asian Americans. Asian Americans have been devastated by this program of eliminating so-called double voters created by Chris Kobach of Kansas. And if you can't remember that name, Well, when you read How Trump Stole 20, he's a star of the book. But just think Chris Kobach of Kansas, Mr. KKK. And he is the guy who's designed a lot of these purge programs, programs to block people from voting. He's the vote thief in chief for Donald Trump, and they've got new tricks. But we can defeat them all. I mean, I don't want you to despair. I can tell you all about the tricks, but I can also tell you how to save your vote.
Well, but before we get to that, there were just two more things I wanted to cover real briefly with you.
Sure.
And the first is, who are some of the names behind this? You named Chris Kobach, Brian Kemp gets brought up. A few of the characters that really interested me were the billionaire Paul Singer, known as the Vulture, and also the Pew Charitable Trust and a program they have called ERIC. What is that all about?
Oh, boy. Okay, first of all, you get 3 silver stars for being a top-notch junior reporter. Actually, you're a senior reporter, so don't let me demote you. Because you are doing the right thing. It's follow the money. Forget about guys like Chris Kobach even, or even Brian Kemp, who's the governor of Georgia. They're just the glove puppets. You're correctly talking about the billionaires. Those are the guys with their fingers in the glove. Remember, when you see Donald Trump's mouth move, it's not him. He's not a billionaire. He just plays one on TV. He needs billionaires behind him to fund his campaign and his other reckless adventures. So, yes. So when you see the destruction, for example, the Voting Rights Act, et cetera, who's put up this money? Stealing votes is not cheap, baby. And it's done for a reason. People do not steal votes to steal elections. And what do I mean by that? No, you steal votes to get the money. In fact, you know that the Koch brothers were not Republicans until recently. They were anti-Republican. John Paulson, one of the biggest funders, the billionaire who crashed the mortgage market, Mr. Foreclosure King himself, you know, and who is, by the way, his partner is Steve Mnuchin. Now, you have to understand, Paulson was a Democrat. He didn't care. He needed, but he doesn't want to pay taxes on the $5 billion. Let me repeat that. $5 billion that this one guy made in 1 year crashing the mortgage market. And the last thing he wants to do is pay taxes on it. So he became a top funder and the head of Trump's financial advisory committee. And his partner became finance chief and now is secretary of the treasury. And what's Mnuchin's job? Has he saved our economy? How does the economy look to you? It looks like a depression to me. So, but why is the guy there if he's advised Trump to lead us into depression? The answer is because he's Paulson's partner. He's the billionaire's, buddy and partner. And they're there to make sure that they are never taxed and that there's no regulations which prevent their ravaging of the America's finances. That's why they're there. That's why they're doing these things. And you mentioned Brian Kemp, by the way. He's the Secretary of State. He was the Secretary of State of Georgia. He used his position to remove 500,000 voters from the voter rolls while he's running for governor. The Wall Street Journal, of all things, said it was unethical. He did it. He removed voters. And by the way, we'll discuss illegally. Became governor. Okay. But why him? Why him? And the answer is, okay, go back to the Kochs and not David or Charles. Here's the interesting thing. I've been tracking the Kochs since 1995. I was the first guy that did a film about them, the richest guys you've never heard about them. Back, this was 25 years ago when no one knew who the hell they were. But there's a third Koch that no one talks about. But it's
William, right?
To talk to me, William, Billy Koch. So there's this third billionaire in the mix. Now, he is the real filth king. Now, Koch Industries is known for its literally the criminal pollution charges against them, which they got dropped through political influence. But brother Billy, now, he runs something called Oxbow Carbon, and they need, they sell carbon filth, pet. It's called pet coke, which is basically dried up tar gunk from the tar sands of Canada. When it comes down through the Keystone pipeline, they have to pull the gunk out of the pipeline. It's too filthy to burn. It's energy. but it's like liquid, crappy coal. You can't burn it in the U.S. It's too dangerous. So we send it to China, and they burn it, and it still goes in our atmosphere and warms the planet. Same atmosphere, by the way, whether it's over China or over California. It ends up all over the world. So Billy Koch needed a president to make sure that he had a pipeline. Now, Trump, by the way, was not in favor. You know that Trump was not crazy about the XL pipeline because, after all, it's bringing in foreign oil, dangerous alien oil into America. But once Billy Koch started writing the checks, suddenly Trump is for this crude filth snake. That's the trick. And by the way, you'll read in How Trump Stole 2020 in my book, a conversation between me and Billy. Believe it or not, the guy used to get a little bit in his cups. He's famous for that at the time. And he would call me up as a reporter at The Guardian, because no one was interested really in the Koch brothers, believe it or not. But he would call me up and rat on his brothers. And for some reason, I don't even know why, I had my tape machine on. So I recorded the guy. So you get the conversations of him laying out in detail the felony crimes committed by his brother. But of course, his crimes, we don't talk about those.
Well, it's interesting too, because, you know, you look at Donald Trump, and, you know, your friend David K. Johnston has said this, you know, he's the fake billionaire. You know, the real billionaires, the real guys are the Koch brothers, the Paul Singers. These are the guys that Trump is basically working for.
Yeah. So you have to understand, follow the money all the time. And when you take that guy Kemp in Georgia, right? Now he's backed. Now, how did he get there? He defeated an incumbent lieutenant governor. How did he get there? Who picked Brian Kemp? And the answer was two organizations, Georgia Pacific and Georgia Power. Now, who is Georgia Pacific? If you go to Atlanta, you see this giant building. Now, Georgia Pacific, what is their product? Toilet paper. Now, why do you need a 40-story building to run a toilet paper operation? And the answer is because Georgia Pacific is just the toilet paper cover-up for Koch Industries. So Koch Industries owns and controls Brian Kemp. They helped him. They put up the money. And there's a second powerhouse in there called Georgia Power. Why is Georgia, what does Georgia Power have to do with anything? Notice that we have this Senator Kelly Loeffler that was appointed by Kemp. She wasn't elected, she was appointed. Now the Republican Party and even Donald Trump, this is very interesting. Here, Kemp went against Donald Trump to pick Loeffler because Trump was told correctly by his people that she's going to have a tough time getting elected. So why would he pick someone who would have such a miserable time being elected? As you know, the NBA players have actually been taking the knee, wearing Black Lives Matter shirts, specifically to demand that Kelly Loeffler, who owns the Atlanta team, by the way, she's ultra rich, is removed from the NBA ownership. So why would they pick this woman Loeffler, of all things? And she's running for re-election, fighting for her life. The answer is that she is on the board of Georgia Power. Now, what does that mean to anyone? What is the power of Georgia Power? Georgia Power owns a nuclear plant that's being the last nuclear plant being constructed in the United States, the Vogtle nuclear plants. They have dropped several billion dollars, which they'll never get, which is a disaster, a hole in the ground. And Kemp and Loeffler have promised that the ratepayers, the bill payers, the electricity customers of Georgia are going to bail out this company. It's going to cost literally probably a couple thousand dollars per household in Georgia. Now, Stacey Abrams, who is running against Brian Kemp, now she's the first Black woman ever to run for governor in the United States, in any state. But she won. She said she won, but she was cheated by Jim Crow tactics. Why would they do this? The answer is not because they don't want a Black woman. No, because this Black woman said, I'm not going to make the people of Georgia pay $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 per family to Kelly Loeffler and her radioactive nuclear marauders for a junk plant that will never produce 1 kilowatt of electricity. That's who Kelly Loeffler is. That's why Brian Kemp is there. So it's not because Stacey Abrams wasn't defeated because she was black. Stacey Abrams wasn't defeated because they because Brian Kemp is a Republican. She was defeated because the nuclear industry and the Koch brothers said, we can't have this threat to our cash flow.
And they have a these voter purges. There's a vested interest these corporate figures to make sure that these Republicans like Brian Kemp win elections. And, you know, on that note, I wanted to get to the solutions, but there's also one more thing I have to mention. I was so glad to see that you had a chapter that got into it with Bob Fitrakis, who is a great investigative journalist out of Ohio. I interviewed him last month. He's a colleague of yours.
Voting rights.
Mm-hmm. Yes, great voting rights attorney. And he's also covering this issue. Maybe you could talk about how there's other journalists that are covering this like yourself and the work they're doing.
Yes, there's a wonderful Bob Fitrakis, who I'm working with right now. He's, by the way, he's my attorney in Ohio. I have the Palast Investigative Fund. We are a nonpartisan, not-for-profit group that investigates billionaires gone wild. And in particular, when they go wild on our electoral system. So Fitrakis is my attorney in Ohio, getting the purge lists and helping me there. And you'll see he appears in the book several times because Ohio is a key state. That's how Obama got elected, by winning Ohio twice, and how Hillary lost, because without Ohio, it's hard for a Democrat to win. So what happened here? Did people suddenly change their mind? No. They removed 800,000 voters. And there's other games that are being played. For example, in 2012 and 16, we saw that there were these, I was covering for a Democracy Now, Amy Goodman's show, and for Rolling Stone. I went to Dayton, Ohio, and it turns out that to make things, quote, fair, the Republican Secretary of State said, oh, we're going to make voting fair. We're going to have early voting stations for Ohio, which is required by federal law. But what we're going to do is we're going to make it fair by having one single voting station for every county. That's fair. Everyone gets one voting station. Well, wait a minute. There's a county in Ohio. So, excuse me for forgetting the name, but why remember? As 6,000 voters, and I think that includes the cows, they get a voting station. But 1 million voters in Cleveland get one voting station. 500,000 voters in Columbus and in Dayton got one voting station. So you can imagine the lines were 5 hours long. 5 hours long. Except then I went to the white suburbs of Toledo, and the lines were exactly no line. You'll see the photos in the book. I have a lot of photos in the book. Because you have to see it. You have to see the long lines, then you have to see the no lines. In fact, if you went to the white voting station in Toledo, when you ran in from your SUV, because it's cold in Ohio, right? The black people are standing in a parking lot for 5 hours in the freezing November cold of Ohio. The white people got cookies and coffee when they arrived. I kid you not. But here's the evil part, and this is where I had a turn to Fitrakis. When they got to the end of the 5 hours, they didn't get ballots. They didn't get regular ballots to vote. They got absentee mail-in ballots. Now, wait a minute. They're in the voting station. Why are they mailing in ballots? Because they're right there. They didn't have to make a mail-in. They allowed them to actually fill out an absentee ballot and stick it, hand it in the window. Why? And I said, why? I asked the clerk, the county clerk. I said, what's going on? Why are these people voting absentee? They're not absent. They're right here in the voting station. And he was blunt. He said, the Secretary of State is a Republican, ordered us to do absentee ballots instead of letting people vote regular ballots. Because regular ballots are counted immediately. Once you count them, it's pretty much solid that your vote counted. You give someone an absentee ballot, a mail-in ballot, my friends, and the chance is quite high that it will be disqualified for any cockamamie reason. I called up Bob Fitrakis and arrived at his house after midnight. If you see my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, I literally have the cameras on when I'm pulling up to his house at midnight. Most lawyers would say, get out of here. But Fetrica said, come on in, and gave me a lesson in what happens to absentee ballots in Ohio mail-in ballots, which is you make any little mistake on filling out that ballot or on the envelope for that ballot, disqualified. They were disqualifying masses and masses of early voting ballots. 70% of African Americans vote early in Ohio. So it's black voters who are subject to a challenge. And in fact, that was a plan for 2016, but Fetrakis, bless his heart, went into a federal court and stopped it. And that story is in the book, including the fact that Karl Rove, you know, the guy that Bush called Turd Blossom, some people call him Bush's brain.
Yeah, he was on TV, wasn't he?
After the one election. Out on Fox News. He said, Obama can't win Ohio because of the early votes still have to be reviewed. And see, he knew what the scheme was, which is to challenge all these black votes. But the federal court said, you're not going to do that. He didn't know that Fetrakis had undermined his schemey little plan to steal Ohio as they had stolen Florida. And as they would steal Ohio 4 years later, that's important.
So closing out here, I think one thing that gets lost in the shuffle, and you can also address the solutions in addition to this, is that, you know, not only does this affect our election outcomes, this has a really heartbreaking impact on the people who get purged and find out about it. You've talked to these people.
Yes. Okay. So if you go to gregpalace.com, you can see it on film, but in the book, you'll see a woman, Christine Jordan. I was in Atlanta when she was going to vote for her 50th year at the same schoolhouse. And I was there when they threw her out. They said she'd been purged from the voter rolls. You're no longer the purge voter rolls. Get out. Her great niece was in absolute hysterics. She said, for 50 years, how could they do it to this woman? Given what she did in the civil rights movement. I go, what do you mean what she did in the civil rights movement? So I went to her house, and there's pictures of Martin Luther King having dinner with her. I said, oh, you knew King? I said, well, he's my cousin. He came to my Sunday dinner every Sunday after sermonizing at the Ebenezer Baptist. This is Martin Luther King's cousin, 50 years at the same place, and they threw her out. But again, she was guilty of voting while black. In addition, you meet these people. And with me, I was also at that same voting station, Raheem Shabazz. Guess his color, right? Raheem Shabazz. He knew he had been purged because he went to gregpalace.com, looked himself up on the purge list, but it was too late for him to re-register. Jasmine Bakhtiar. And he was fuming mad. And then they let him fill out a provisional ballot. Now, I got to tell you, Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, get to decide whether those so-called provisional ballots get counted. So the guy who's running for governor got to say, no, don't count Raheem's ballot. So Raheem didn't get his ballot counted. But they did give him a picture of a peach that says, I voted. He didn't get a vote, but he got it, the sticker. He said, what do I do with this, eat this? Yeah, it's tragic and angering, but I'm going to tell you something else. One good thing about Georgia that I saw with Stacey Abrams and Fair Fight, where I was doing work with her organization, others, you can bust the burglary. In Georgia, people are super energized over the theft of the vote. People are re-registering. People are finding out if they're purged. You can find out if you're purged, by the way, very easily. It's shockingly easily, but you have to look. Go on your state Secretary of State's website, or your county board of elections, see if you're registered. I did. I was not registered. That is, I was removed. I had to re-register online. Save your vote. You can do it. In fact, the back of How Trump Stole 2020, there's something called the ballot condom for safe voting, so you can save your vote.
I was going to add really quickly, too. I know there's going to be someone out there that'll try to respond to this by saying, oh, well, you know, if Republicans are stealing the votes, then how come Democrats won with Obama? How would you respond to this sort of layman who just
that's a good no it's
that.
Actually a very good question. I don't think it's unsophisticated at all. It's like, if they're stealing votes, well, how come they don't steal all the elections? And the answer is simple. In fact, I asked Obama, just so you know, and it's real simple. His answer is the same as mine. They can't steal all the votes all the time. In fact, as I point out in my book, I have a very careful calculation, which I was reading you some of the numbers. 7.8 million voters were blocked or had their votes disqualified in 2016. It'll be much higher now because of mail-in voting. But they can't steal all the votes all the time. You can overwhelm the steal. Now, there's two things you can do. Number one, Obama himself said, well, my plan was just, he knew all about the steal, by the way. I was writing for Rolling Stone with Bobby Kennedy, and Obama had a very sophisticated understanding. So what was going on? How did he win? He said, I just overwhelmed it. You have to overwhelm the steal. They can't steal all the votes all the time. They steal about 6%, 5% is our calculation. It's pretty clear. So you have to win with 56%. Stop crying. Get going. Get to work. Win the election your way. And by the way, it's not that I'm for or against Trump. I'm for saying let the voters pick the president, which would be something new in America. Let the voters choose the president, not the tricks. The other thing is that you can do, which Obama was less excited about because it's too difficult, is fight it. Fight the steal. Expose the steal. That's what I do as a journalist. That's what you're doing right now. We're telling people your vote's at risk. Protect it. Do something about it. Don't let them take your vote. Don't let them take the votes of people you know. Fight to change the rules, but also fight to protect your vote. And that means taking steps like, and number one, number two, number six, number 12, check your registration. I start out by saying 17 million people lost their vote. That could be you. It was me. It was Martin Luther King's cousin. It was Raheem Shabazz. Please, don't let them take your vote. Check your registration and re-register. I find that it's very rare. It happens, but it's rare that for them to remove your vote twice. They do it once. And they want to see. And those who bitch and those who do something about it, well, they leave you alone because they know you're sophisticated.
And not only did Obama know about the steals, but also, and I didn't realize this until I read your book, was John Kerry knew too. He referenced your book when that famous tasing incident happened.
Right. Yeah, no, Kerry, actually, that if you remember, there's Taser Boy. What happened was this kid at the University of Florida in Gainesville held up my book, Armed Madhouse. It's a yellow-covered book. The Washington Post called it some strange yellow book. Why is it strange? It was on the Washington Post's own bestseller list. So Armed Madhouse, he was holding up Armed Madhouse, and he said to Kerry, you know, Greg Palast says you won the election in Ohio if you counted all the votes. Why did you concede? Have you read Greg Palast's book? At that point, the cops grabbed him, threw him on the ground, and tased him. That's what the newspapers covered. But they never covered the real substantive issue that the kid was trying to get across. And by the way, he told me, this kid, that no, even when they were tasing him, he wouldn't let the book touch the floor as if it were the flag. I was so moved by that. But the thing that really moved me is John Kerry said, yeah, I read Palast's book. And he was right about the election. Whereas John Kerry said, yes, the election was stolen from me. And his running mate, John Edwards, knew that night that it had been stolen. He was livid about the concession. But Kerry conceded that night. But later reading my book, he said, yeah, they stole it. So he knew it and said something. And Stacey Abrams, she wasn't quiet at all. I said that 340,134 voters, that's a third of a million voters, including King's cousin, were illegally removed. She cited that again and again. She cited the case of Christine Jordan again and again and said, I won. I defeated Brian Kemp. I won the governorship, but I won't be inaugurated because of these Jim Crow tricks. So we finally had someone standing up. But once again, what is the color of the person confronting America? This is the issue that we still have to deal with in America. You know, it's not just cops choking you to death. It's not just I can't breathe, but I can't vote.
Well, Greg Palast, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views. How can my listeners keep up with your work and also get a copy of how Trump stole 2020.
Well, I would advise you to put on a mask when you go into your bookstore and pick up How Trump Stole 2020. Don't use a gun. So you get at the usual places, How Trump Stole 2020. But more important, I want you to go to Greg, or not so, it's with it, go to gregpalast.com. That's GREGPALAST. And get my continuing updates and reports on the how Trump has stolen 2020. And most important, how you can steal it back. And whether you get it on the book or get it from the website, we do have that ballot condom for safe voting. No, it's not something you wrap around the ballot. It is something where we give you the 7 steps to follow to make sure you get your ballot, your mail-in ballot, because I don't want you to die, and how to get it and fill it out so you don't lose it, because they don't want to count your vote. They don't want to give you your ballot. They don't want to count your vote. They don't want you to be on the voter rolls. So what we do is we bust the ballot bandits. And we can. We've done it before. It can be done. They can't steal all the votes all the time. And that's why this program is so important. It's vital to us, because there's very few places that are going to tell you your vote's in danger. And here's how you protect it. That's the key. Because if there was no hope, I wouldn't bother.
Well, I'm also happy that your work is getting a lot of, it's gaining a lot of steam with, the DiCaprio family you mentioned at the end of the book, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I really love that people are getting behind your work.
Yes. And in fact, I, with The Rock, he was my executive producer for a program I did with BET, Black Entertainment Channel. It would be nice to be on the White Entertainment Channel too, but we're working on that.
Well, I think we'll get there, and I think we'll expose the problem of voter purges in America. I think we're closer than ever before, closer than we were in 2000, and I'm very happy to have had you on the show. You're doing really, really important work, and you're keeping investigative journalism alive. So thank you again, Greg Palast.
And thank you again, because you are the one who's keeping this journalism alive. Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Greg Palast, investigative journalist extraordinaire and author of the new book, How Trump Stole 2020. Hopefully, we can steal it back, as Greg has suggested. Let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax, or by email at parallaxviewspod@protonmail.com. And of course, if you can, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Producers credit shoutouts to Amelia, Mark, Martin, John, and Brace. Please consider joining them at the $10 tier of the Parallax Views Patreon at, again, patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. With no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.